Good morning. I love that video about empathy by Brené Brown. This morning, I would like to humbly invite you to practice the aspects of empathy as you listen to each of us share. Remember, empathy is a vulnerable choice. And in order to connect with others, you have to access something inside of yourself that recognizes that feeling. So please practice empathy today. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Susan Vergeret. I've been a Christian for 28 years. I've been married to Edwin for over 18, and we have two beautiful daughters, Cambry, who's 14, or 16, and Macy, who's 14. And I've been a licensed professional counselor for 10 years. My professional experience includes working in an inpatient psychiatric hospital, working for a community mental health center, and most recently, my own private practice. I'm so honored today to speak to you about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and that's mental illness in adolescents and young adults. Now, if you don't have an adolescent, please don't tune me out. I know that my message may only apply to about 30% of you, but as a church community, we have all been touched by mental illness in some way, whether personally, via a family member or friend. So even though I'm addressing mental illness in the youth, many of you have been touched by it, and many of the principles I share will apply. One of my main motivators for becoming a therapist was to help individuals like myself. You see, I have depression. Excuse me. And I've had it most of my adult life. I've had several depressive episodes, so to speak, but a few stand out in my life. One right before I met Edwin, and then twice after I gave birth to both of my daughters, I had severe postpartum depression. Most don't realize the difference between feeling sad or feeling down from time to time to the debilitating, I can't get out of bed to take care of my own baby type of depression. And I had the latter, so I decided I'm going back to school. I'm going to get my master's degree in counseling, and I'm going to help individuals like myself. I want to give others hope that this illness does not have to destroy your life or define you, and that I wanted to be a resource for those struggling with mental illness. One of my great professional experiences was working at an inpatient psychiatric hospital. It was both disturbing and intriguing to see mental illness in real life, to go from studying mental illness in a textbook to treating it live and in person. That was particularly gratifying for me. But it was especially difficult for me to work on the adolescent unit because of the things I witnessed and the stories I heard. It was sobering and heartbreaking. Did you know that 1 in 5 adolescents have mental illness? That's 20% of our youth. 50% develop a condition by age 14, and 75% develop a condition by age 24. It's the second leading cause of death for ages 10 to 14, and a third leading cause for ages 15 to 24. Swap those. And that 90% of those that die by suicide had an underlying mental illness. The average delay between onset of symptoms and treatment is 8 to 10 years. That was certainly true for me. These statistics are so staggering, and we have the opportunity to close this gap by talking openly about mental illness and applying early interventions. You know, it's one thing to deal with mental illness in my own life, to seek treatment, to learn how to live with it, but it's entirely different and has been incredibly painful to watch my own child suffer from mental illness. Just so you know, my daughter did give me permission to share her story. It started in the 5th grade for my youngest daughter when she was initially diagnosed with ADHD. It's a brain disorder that affects, among other things, an individual's executive functioning. We knew that she also was struggling with anxiety based on behaviors at home and feedback that we got from her teachers. However, we didn't realize how bad it was until the 8th grade when she started cutting. Again, there's a difference between feeling worried about things from time to time and anxiety that can take over and affect and interrupt so many areas of your life. And my daughter has the latter. As we began to unravel what was going on with her, we discovered that not only was she cutting, but she also struggled with dark thoughts, including suicidal ideation. She was restricting her food intake to 1 meal per day to lose weight. Even now, as I share our story, I worry about the judgments that will be made about myself, about my daughter, and about my family. You can't imagine the shame I felt as we discovered these things were happening with our daughter under our own roof. And I'm a therapist. This is what I treat for a living. And I couldn't protect my daughter from this illness. I should know better, is what I thought. I should have seen this coming earlier. I should somehow be immune to this. She's being raised in a good home by two loving and faithful parents. She has a wonderful sister. She does not want for anything. How could this happen? Why? The thing is, mental illness does not discriminate. It doesn't discriminate between rich and poor, Christian homes and non, healthy families and dysfunctional ones. Some are led to believe that this kind of thing only happens in abusive and dysfunctional homes. And it doesn't happen in homeless like ours, right? Again, mental illness does not discriminate. So what can we do? What can we do as parents, as friends, as a church community? We need to pay attention to the warning signs. We need to open up the dialogue with our teens and young adults. And we need to ask for help, both for ourselves and for our youth. So what are the warning signs? It's not uncommon for parents to wonder whether their child is acting like a normal teenager or behaving differently due to mental illness. Is this just part of growing up or a mental health problem that should be discussed with a healthcare professional? A few of the warning signs that we observed were withdrawing from social activities and isolating. Self-harm, I already shared that she was cutting. It's important to know that some people will wear long pants and long sleeves, even in warm weather, to hide that they're doing this. Suicidal thoughts or statements, we found Macy's journal detailing her dark thoughts, but to be fair, she left it out for us to find. Not eating, throwing up, using laxatives to lose weight. Please pay attention, especially working parents. This can go undetected for some time. Cambry is actually the one who brought it to our attention, and I'm so grateful that she did. But Edwin and I were really busy and distracted. And then drastic changes in behavior. She had incredibly low energy. She was lethargic. She wanted to sleep all the time. And so as you read these warning signs, it's really important to remember that no one sign means that there's a problem. We have to examine the nature, the intensity, the severity, the duration of the problem. If there are signs and symptoms that last 2 weeks or longer, and if these issues interfere with the life of the individual, not only at home, but also at school and with friends, so three areas, then you should reach out and ask for help. So what can we do? First, we need to educate ourselves. Learn everything you can about mental illness is the first step in knowing how to help someone struggling. With my daughter, I found books on ADHD, anxiety, the teenage brain. I've become a student again in regard to what my daughter is dealing with. And in knowing my research and becoming knowledgeable about her specific struggles, she has felt more loved and more understood by me as her mom. But it's also helped me to parent her more effectively. You see, I found that my default ways of parenting, they didn't work anymore. And I had to learn new ways to parent. You have to become the expert in your child. You have to trust your instincts. You are in the best position to know your child and advocate for their care. Second, we got to talk openly. Bring it out of the darkness. This is the first strategy and can also often be the most effective. If your teen or friend is struggling with mental illness, the worst thing you do is to ignore it or pretend it doesn't exist. Talking openly and honestly about depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. It reduces the stigma of silence around these issues. And it lets your child and your friend know that it's okay to speak up and to let people know what you're going through. But make no mistake, your kids are talking about these things. You get to influence if they talk to you or if they talk to your peers. As a family, we worked really hard to create a safe place in our home for our girls to discuss these issues. Edwin and I made ourselves available for Macy to reach out. We'll answer her call no matter what we're doing. We also had to work on responding with patience instead of reacting in frustration when issues came up, such as a cutting incident or struggling with suicidal thoughts. In addition, we also need to have conversations about drug and alcohol abuse. Many individuals that I treat in my practice choose to experiment with drugs and alcohol to escape the weight of mental illness. While your teen or friend may never try dangerous substances, please don't assume that they won't. Instead, we need to have discussions about the dangers of drugs and alcohol and the negative impact they have on the developing adolescent brain, which, by the way, doesn't reach full development until your mid-20s. We need to provide support. If your teen or friend opens up about their mental illness or struggles, we need to be patient and, above all, listen. I heard someone say, God gave us two ears and one mouth. We should use them proportionately. Let them know that having a mental illness doesn't change how much you love them. It may be difficult, and I found this difficult, but try not to jump to conclusions, blame certain people, events, or situations for what they're experiencing. And as we talk, we need to refrain from using dismissive and judgmental language. This is an opportune time to practice empathy because it fuels connections with our teens and each other. When talking to someone who's struggling, it's important to think before you speak. I love what Brené Brown said. Don't try to intellectualize their feelings with at least statements, right? Or put a silver lining on their issues. Instead, be curious. Ask open-ended questions about how they're feeling. Try to seek a deeper understanding. Most individuals don't want to be fixed. They want to be heard and they want to be validated. Remember, rarely can your response make something better. What makes something better is connection. And we need to seek advice and intervention. Pride, fear, and denial can often get in our way of accepting there's a problem with our child. As parents, we have hopes and dreams for our children. We see them coming together in these teenage years as their adult personality emerges, and it's a really exciting time. But often, teens who are intelligent, creative, and talented become ill just as they're coming into their own. This can be earth-shattering for parents. And it makes it very easy to deny a problem exists. Ignoring the problem does not make it go away. On the contrary, it makes it worse. Remember, the earlier treatment is started, the more effective it can be in preventing more severe and lasting problems. You know, it's good to start with your primary care physician, right? When we're seeking help, advice, and intervention, they can help you get an appropriate referral to a mental health provider. And after we did that, with our daughter, we found a therapist that specialized in treating adolescent anxiety, ADHD. And even though I'm a therapist, I am not an expert in these areas. And there's a reason why healthcare professionals should not treat their own family members. I have certain blind spots when it comes to my girls, and so do you. So working closely with her therapist has helped me to help my daughter. I've had to humble myself and ask for help, accept that I don't know everything. This has allowed me to accept guidance and direction from others. We also worked closely with her school to develop a support system for her to succeed academically. There's a fine line between advocating for your child and making excuses for them or enabling them, and we need others in our lives to help us to find that line. And even if you seek help from a mental health professional, it's so important to stay involved. Don't be hands off and go, okay, she has got help, he's got help. That person may be an expert in their field, but you are an expert in your child. Your child needs you now more than ever to stay engaged in their treatment. And finally, and most importantly, we need to connect with others. It's important that we have a support system to help us navigate this emotional and often painful journey. We need help. We need help from people in our lives to help us stay faithful, to guide us and direct us, to not lose heart, to remind us to rely on God throughout these challenges. I am so grateful for my trusted friends, those that have been a safe place for me to be vulnerable and to share my doubts and fears. But Edwin and I have also worked hard to connect and build a social support system for our daughter. It's been invaluable to have other people involved in her life as mentors, as other trusted adults that she feels safe to share openly her struggles. You know, mental illness can be scary and often confusing for both the individuals and the ones that love them. So we need to remember these things. One, discussing what you're going through with others is an important first step. Speaking up and asking for help is a sign of strength, not weakness. In Ephesians 4, it says, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Second, mental illness is not your fault, and it's not your family's fault. It develops for very complicated reasons that researchers are only beginning to understand. In John 9:1, who sinned? This man? Their parents? No, neither. But this happened so the works of God might be displayed in him. And finally, mental health services are available. And the earlier you access them, the better. Many teens and young adults live full lives with a mental illness. You are not alone. In John 16:33, Jesus says, in this world you have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. I'm happy to share that Macy has made great progress in this past year. She's been utilizing her coping skills, accessing her resources, and talking openly about her anxiety. Seeing this in my daughter gives me hope that we can destigmatize mental illness, and we can make a difference for the next generation and beyond. I'd like to end with my favorite quote, one of them. Mending a boy or a girl is easier than fixing a man or a woman. Thank you so much. This has been such an honor for me to be able to share my personal and professional experience on this critical topic of breaking the chains of mental illness. I'd like to invite Sho up to the stage to read a poem. Thank you.
Hello, all. Ooh, okay. This poem is a glimpse to my day-to-day life with my depression and my relationship with God. It's called 50 First Dates. I feel like Drew Barrymore's character on 50 First Dates. And God is the very pure version of Adam Sandler. He always goes out of his way to impress me just because he was that blown away by the mere thought of me. So he created me and decided to woo me up, and he booed me up with his love. He set me up to fly, to be covered in the blood of his son. He set me up for success and rescued me from the depths of the murky mud. He pulled me out of the waters of my tears, drowning out my sorrows as if I were in a flood, the darkness in me dying to his kindness. The gray areas of my life became the technicolor color of his vibrance. My rescuer, my lover, my hero. At the cross, he drew me near. Alive, I felt in my heart, courageous woman, with a king by my side, no fear. I slept in peace with his love singing in my ear. And the next morning, it was as if I had forgotten everything. I was back in the murky depths of my sorrows, forgetting about the God who deeply loves the woman staring back at me in the mirror. And on and on and on he goes with patient love. You see, he calls my heart, and his spirit sets me apart from my sinful destiny. Day in and day out, he rescues me from myself. Sometimes I hear him immensely, and we have our best days. Other days I choose my flesh, and still in grace he stays. And then some days I don't hear him at all, until my head reaches my pillow, when life's volume turns all the way down, and when all the chaos in my mind and heart finally begin to calm back down. God's beautiful voice comes in, and it's softly loud, a wonderful comfort to my soul, and I sleep. And when I awake, the beautiful cycle begins again with love notes written in a book for me to remember the best love that I will ever know. Thank you.
Thank you. Amen. Thank you, Shalonda. That was so encouraging to hear that. And Susan, for you as well, thank you for your vulnerability and your heart, and your professionalism. My name is Tim Summerlin, and I'm honored to speak today on breaking the chains of mental health challenges with Friends Who Help. I'm so grateful for these past two Sundays on diversity and same-sex attraction. The courage and vulnerability on display is refreshing and inspiring to me. Thanks to the smart, insightful, and courageous disciples who spoke, and to the Denver church, who responded in humility and compassion. Mental health is another perspective to our diversity discussions here in the Denver church. mental health issues like anxiety, depression, autism, OCD, ADD, and others. All are challenges that many of us face on a daily basis. Our time today is designed to start or continue a discussion for you and your trusted friends. We're speaking to both those who struggle with mental health issues and those who want to help. That's all of us. And there's no judgment in this room today. We simply come as brothers and sisters in the same family, seeking to better understand each other and help each other out. I want to let you know I come to you as a fellow sufferer. Members of my family and myself deal with anxiety and other mental health issues, and we've taken medication at times to help relieve the symptoms. I was somewhat skeptical about those with mental health challenges until my mom had cancer and died. And I was helpless to do anything about it. I then had my first panic attack. It was in the back seat of her car. It was terrifying, and my life radically changed. For those skeptics in the crowd, please be aware of the reality of these kinds of symptoms. Just because you can't relate doesn't mean they don't exist. There's always a need for grace. So let's try something right now as a church. I want to spend 1 minute doing something. Turn to the person next to you. Don't get up, but turn to the person next to you and share how either yours or someone else's mental health issues have affected you. Let's go for 1 minute. Okay, let's bring it back together now. You know, by the buzz I hear in the room, I can tell this is obviously an important topic. Our difficulties with mental health have not caught God by surprise, though. Actually, in many ways, God is powerfully working in our challenges. In James chapter 1, James reminds us to consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Often, mental health challenges are character builders, intricately connected to our faith and our growth as disciples of Jesus. I would rather grow by having great quiet times in front of my fireplace, and those are always needed. But God seems to grow me through my challenges. He did it with Jesus, so why do I think I'll be any different? You know, our weaknesses are often an opportunity for the Holy Spirit to develop unique and useful skills that otherwise we would not develop. Weakness has a way of bringing us closer to God and actually attracts others to your faith in God. But at times, our mental health challenges become too much and our lives suffer. Mental health issues can become overwhelming, but there are ways to lessen the negative effects of them. You know, while we can't control every aspect of our lives, we can adjust to the life that comes along. I love this quote: I can't change the direction of the wind, but I can adjust my sails to always reach my destination. So let's spend a few minutes talking about adjusting our sails. One way we do so is by taking advantage of all known resources, as Susan just so eloquently spoke about. And I believe the church is an amazing resource to help us to adjust our sails. So let's talk about the church. I recently read a book called Lost Connections by Johann Hari. This New York Times bestseller is an excellent resource to build conversation around any mental health issue that we face. The author's opinion was this: in the past 20 or so years, the narrative to help with depression and mental health challenges has been only a medical discussion. that it's a problem with our brain chemistry and it can only be resolved by medicine. Now, this sounds like a compassionate approach, but in reality, it can be very harsh. If mental health issues are only an issue of brain chemistry, then medicine should clear it up, right? But if meds don't clear it up, then I'm in trouble. If that doctor can't help me, then who can? And I know many people are in that predicament. So Johann traveled the world over, looking for established research in other countries on ways to lessen the effects of mental health challenges and how to resolve these issues in our lives. He found several areas of discussion that are beyond the medicine-only approach that I want to briefly share with you, and how I believe the church is the perfect place to find help. Now, remember, the author here is not saying that you should stop taking medicine or that it's irrelevant. So keep on seeing your doctor and using your medication. Do what your doctor says. But along with medication, consider these features of mental health challenges and how the church setting helps us. The author found that people suffering with mental health challenges have lost what he called vital connections. And by restoring these lost connections, we lessen the negative effects of anxiety, depression, and other issues. So here are some of his lost connection points, areas of our lives that we can improve on to lessen the negative effects of mental health challenges. So the first couple up here may not be directly associated to church, but we can certainly gain encouragement and insight to those as Christians. Things like physical activity, our value at work, and meaningfulness in our careers are all important factors in considering how to lessen the negative effects of mental health disease. Other connection points that our time in church can help with include childhood trauma, issues with a lack of respect, and hope for your future. But here are a couple of ones I want to talk about, and I want to illuminate and let you know how I think the church is a perfect place for these connection points. They're in the yellow there. He talks about having an addiction to ourself, being involved in isolation, and involvement in a community. You know, we tend to be addicted to ourselves, don't we? You know, we can be very self-centered, and dealing with mental health issues can make this even worse. Mental health issues also have the ability to isolate us. We can feel shame, loneliness, and feel less than others. And the author says the antidote to that is being involved in a community. You know, we or other people might give us labels as we grow up. And we can actually live by those labels and get comfortable with labels, even becoming loyal to them. Labels like these: fat, skinny, goofy, smart, depressed, anxious, insecure, black, white, brown, male, female, gay, straight, and on and on. Brothers and sisters, Jesus came to remove labels from our lives and to give us a new identity. He removes the shame that's associated with labels. You see it all throughout the Gospels, from prostitutes to demon-possessed men to the blind to those physically challenged, even dead people. Everyone Jesus met, he changed if they were willing. But there's a purpose to our new identity. It's that we become part of a remarkable community, the Lord's church. A community like none other in the world. It is unique, and yet it's multifaceted. While full of imperfect people, the church is also the body of our perfect and loving Lord Jesus. There's no community in the world like the Lord's church. You know, sometimes we get used to church. It's like the water that we swim in. But my being numb to the greatness of the church does not make the Lord's church any less amazing. So let me say this. You know, just because we deal with mental health challenges does not mean that we're less spiritual people. those who have mental health challenges in the past sometimes have been labeled as unspiritual. But it's like any other challenge that we face. It's what you do with your challenge that could be unspiritual or even more spiritual. Are the lights going on and off? Thought I was having like a reaction up here or something. It happens when you hit your 60s, I think. By the way, make sure you stop by Greg Jackson today. It's a very special day in his life. Just want to let you know. But we'll continue. You know, having mental health issues is not an unspiritual issue. It's what you do with your challenges that can be spiritual or unspiritual. I think about some of my favorite heroes in the Bible. Think about Elijah. He was suicidal. The Bible says he sat down under a solitary broom tree and he prayed that he might die. "I've had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life, for I am no better than my ancestors who've already died." How about Job? He was depressed. He said, "Hey, terrors overwhelm me. My life ebbs away. Days of suffering grip me. Night pierces my bones. My gnawing pains never rest." Jeremiah once lamented, "Cursed be the day I was born. Why did I ever come out of the womb to see trouble and sorrow and end my days in shame?" How about David? He was a man after the heart of God, but he apparently had a sexual addiction. And in today's world, he might have been diagnosed with bipolar. He had huge ups and enormous downs. Jesus himself once said, "I am overwhelmed with sorrow, even to the point of death." You know, many people with mental health issues are some of the most spiritual people I know. Turn in your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, or look up here. I want to finish out talking about the Lord's church. I love the Lord's church. I love it. I love it when it's bad, I love it when it's good. I've been in the Lord's church for about 38 years or something. Most of my life, it's been a very exciting place to live my life. I'm so glad to be in part of the Lord's church. Here, Paul is speaking about the importance of every single member of the Lord's church. So this includes you. Let's look in verse 22. Paul says, "Those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other." That's a pretty weighty passage there. I want to draw you your attention to a couple thoughts I have. First of all, the parts in red are us. This is how we might think about people in the church. We might think that they seem to be weaker. We might think that they are less honorable or that they're even unpresentable. Those are the parts in red. We may look down on those who have challenges, but thank God that he thinks differently, right? God's the guy in yellow up there. Look at the way he thinks. God says things like they're indispensable. God says we should have special honor for those people. They should be treated with special modesty. And then God actually puts the parts of the body together. Why? Why does God do this? He says he does it so that we won't have any divisions in our church and that we have equal concern for each other. It's a perfect functioning body when we have equal concern for one another. So here's a couple reminders as we close out. Number one, you are important. Each one of the people in this church are important. God says it, so let's believe it. God uses us to make sure there's no division in the church, that we have equal concern for each other. Each one of us is special and important, and when we practice this, the world takes notice. Secondly, though, you're accepted here. It doesn't matter who you are. You are not a lesser citizen, but a full member of God's people.
Thank you. Who did that? Love a good hearty amen. You know, God doesn't discriminate. He welcomes everybody into his church, into his kingdom. Let's honor each other and every member for God who created them to be as we strive to imitate Jesus. Thirdly, you're safe here. I'm amazed at the freedom I find when I share the most difficult areas of my life with a brother or sister. And I find acceptance, understanding, advice, and love. And let me give a quick plug right here for the Disciples in Motion ministry. You know, at Disciples in Motion, we insist on a safe and confidential environment. It's a great place to work on any mental health challenge that you may have. And we'll get started back up in February of next year. So keep that in mind. And finally, in the church, you're going to find purpose here. You know, the church is more about more than just me. It's about others. I love the church. We honor, lift up, and live diversity. We serve the poor. We reach out with the good news to a lost community. And we love those who others will not love. We find purpose in loving God and others. And you know, when people walk into our church, it's the first thing they notice. There's something different about this group. You know, those people may not remember the sermon. I certainly don't remember my first sermon, but I'll never forget the love of the disciples I saw. You know, I hope this book will spark some insightful conversations in your families, among your friends, and in the church. Finally, as I close out, allow me to share a few tips for us as a church. This is for all of us as we seek to love each other. Let's help the weak by being weak. You know, nobody wants to be helped by a perfect person. We all have issues. And when we're in touch with our own weaknesses, we are more compassionate, kind, insightful, and effective in helping other people. Vulnerability is vital as we strive to help others. You know, we help others, as Susan mentioned, by listening to each other with humble hearts. Everyone wants to be listened to and understood. We listen in a respectful way that allows us to ask helpful questions. Helpful questions like, can you help me understand you better? Or maybe a question like, how can I help? Or finally, who else can we get involved to help out here? And then finally, think resources. God provides many useful and effective resources at our disposal to help. And at the end of the service today, we'll put up a slide with many of those different resources. One of my favorite authors, Ed Welch, he said something that's really stuck with me, and I want to close out with this. The best stories are not those of victory over struggles, but of a stubborn faith in the midst of them. Christina Campbell, our women's ministry leader in the Denver College campuses, will now share in our communion time about her journey with a mental health challenge.
So, like Tim shared, my name is Christina Campbell, and my husband and I serve as the evangelist and women's ministry leader for the campus ministries in Denver and Boulder. And I'm really grateful to get to share my story with you today in connection with the topic of mental health. Working with millennials and the younger generation in our world and in our church, mental health is something I care deeply about because I see how much it impacts our youth in so many ways. I've spent the last 6 years personally studying out mental health and ways to learn to manage our minds in spiritual and practical ways. And I love being able to teach these things to the women I lead and share with them how it's helped me in my own struggle. My girls know this is like one of my favorite topics to speak about. With so many people in this young generation struggling with mental health, I think it's a big deal that we're talking about it today and addressing it in a way that can help us to open up conversations. And as a minister to this generation, I feel grateful that God has helped me to actually experience and understand this struggle personally so that I can help many other people in their battles. I grew up in this fellowship of churches as a Kingdom kid, starting when my mom was baptized when I was 3.5 years old. And I feel so grateful to have been raised in a family that is so influenced and supported by this church. My family has a long history of mental health issues throughout many generations. Everyone in my immediate family has been on some type of medication at one time or another. We have people who have depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, suicidal ideation, and paranoia. So mental health issues have never been a hidden topic to my family. But I'm grateful that I grew up in a place where it was really safe to have conversations about this. And I know that's not the case for a lot of people. I was diagnosed with clinical depression in the 5th grade. That's a confusing time and a scary time to feel like you don't have control over what's going on in your head. And going into middle school it's a weird time for anyone, but if you add depression and anxiety to it, it does not make it any easier for sure. My dad was actually baptized at the end of my 8th grade year after my mom had been a part of the church for 12 years, and I was baptized 4 days after him. And I feel like God knew that I was gonna need his help with my mental health struggles in high school. I feel like in high school, I really learned that my stress level had an immense impact on my depression and anxiety. I cared really deeply about doing well in school. I was your classic overachiever and perfectionist, and I ended up working way too hard at times and felt like I had this weakness that kept me from being able to do things the way I wanted to. In the first semester of my junior year in high school, I pushed myself really hard. I was taking 4 AP classes, 2 honors classes, working part-time, junior editor of the yearbook, and I was a lead role in our school play, which, as a theater major at an art school, it takes a lot of extra stuff to do. But I was losing a lot of sleep, trying to get all my homework done. I was becoming more withdrawn and less motivated because the average day seemed too big to handle. I started missing a lot of school, and my grades started slipping, and I ended up with so many tardies my junior year that I almost couldn't go on to my senior year. Thankfully, my parents were a really safe place for me to talk about these things. I could share with them my sadness and my fear and anxiety. I could share with them my fatigue and my lack of motivation. And I could share when I considered harming myself and when I just didn't think life was worth really living anymore. They were really supportive in helping me get the help that I needed, even when they didn't always know what that looked like. I'm sure there was a ton of fears for themselves as parents not knowing what to do, but I'm really grateful that they didn't let that keep them from getting me the help that I needed. And being in the teen ministry at the time meant that I had a whole network of teen workers and teen leaders who could really help me as well. I never was made to feel less of a Christian, unworthy, broken, messed up, or anything else because of my mental health struggles. But I know that's not the case for so many people. And I'm so grateful that God put people in my life that could help me handle what was going on in my heart and mind. My friends may not have always understood what I was going through, but I'm really glad that I had parents and leaders who would listen to me, and I think that made all the difference. When I moved to the mission team in Clemson in college, I was actually blown away by how much help I got with my mental health struggles. I had church leaders and married mentors and friends who were really supportive in helping me feel like I could actually make progress in this area of my life. I remember sitting at my favorite coffee shop in Clemson with my church leader and mentor and crying about how out of control I felt in my depression. They listened with open ears and caring hearts, and they encouraged me in so many of the different ways that I could get help that I hadn't considered for myself. And then moving to Colorado after college, I found the same support. I felt like I made the most progress in my mental health after moving to Colorado because I felt so empowered to go after learning and growing in this area of my life. Brian, my husband, he actually didn't have a very serious understanding or background with depression, but he's grown with me in this process. And he's been so supportive of me learning and growing and actually doing the things that help me most. And he constantly reminds me about the things that I've learned so that I can implement them in my life on an ongoing process, which is good. It actually helps me. I feel like the staff and elder couples here, friends, and specifically in Motion has really helped to be a huge support to me. And I've been really grateful that I've had this support in my family and in the church, both by people who understand depression and by those who don't. Not everyone has had this kind of an experience, though. And I'd like to share with you guys something that I've seen as a campus minister and working with so many of the students who actually grew up in our church. I'm really glad that as a church we've grown in addressing these mental health concerns and in providing resources for family and friends to know more of how to help when these things come up. The whole idea, actually, of this taboo series is very cool, to be able to open up conversations about these hard topics. And I'm really grateful for everything that Susan and Tim shared. Unfortunately, in my time as a campus minister, I've heard of too many students who have grown up in our church and feel like they tried to talk with someone, a parent, a teen mentor or leader, a teen worker, about their mental health struggles, and they didn't get the help that they needed. They've tried to talk about mental health, depression, anxiety, self-harm, suicidal ideation, eating disorders, and so many of them felt like it didn't go anywhere. They didn't go to the doctor or get counseling. They were told that depression doesn't exist for Christians or that they must be in some kind of sin. And other people just felt like they were never listened to in the first place. You know, we care really deeply about shepherding each student individually in the campus ministry, and we're not really surprised when somebody gets baptized on campus and they didn't get support that they needed growing up with their mental health. But college should not be the first time that the students who grow up in our church get help with their mental health. We have to be able to open up these conversations in our families, with our friends, as mentors or disciplers. And I know it can be really scary when you don't know what to do. Maybe you don't know how to help or what to say or where to go with these things, but it's so important that we do whatever it takes to have the conversation and get every person in our church the help that they need to deal with their mental health. I know that none of these issues or students were dismissed or disregarded intentionally, but I do know that a lot of them could be in a really different place if they got help with their mental health earlier on. I've seen too many of these students struggle with their faith, wrestle with their mental health, and some even walk away because they didn't get help when they really needed it earlier on. And despite having such a personal, positive experience with the church and getting help myself, I still struggled with the fear and insecurity that depression and anxiety bring. I felt shame about being a Christian and struggling with these things, knowing that you shouldn't worry or you should be full of joy. And I've heard a ton of lies from Satan that I couldn't make an impact if I had these problems, or I'd never be able to conquer this struggle. I've listened to Satan as he says God's not big enough to help, or maybe I did something wrong to have him give me this struggle. And I think even with so much love and support, I felt a lot of fear and shame and doubt and insecurity. And that's part of the trick of mental health, is even when people are really there for you, you can still hear a lot of lies. So I've spent a lot of time studying this stuff out, and I found tons of scriptures and tons of practicals that can help me in my walk with God and in my walk with my mental health struggles. One of these scriptures that stood out to me a lot lately has been 2 Timothy 1:7. It says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, of love, and of self-discipline." And in the past, Jesus' strength to go through the ultimate loneliness for me was something that really inspired me. The fact that Jesus was willing to take on all of my sin and die on the cross so that I never had to go without God in my struggle has been huge. But I think the biggest shift happened for me when I realized that God's given me this power too. That he didn't just give power to Jesus to overcome death and his struggles, but he gives that same power to me. And that I can use that power to fight this battle. It may not mean that my depression goes away or that I never struggle with it or I don't get anxious, but I have the power to really implement the things that are going to help me with my mental health. He gives me his word and he gives me prayer and he gives me a lot of practicals that can help me in my battle and my struggle. God's given me incredible love from himself and from his followers, from the church, and support when I feel weak and ashamed and doubtful or insecure. I love that perfect love drives out fear. And I don't have to fear these struggles or fear my bad days or fear my bad seasons because they won't win out in the end if I'm willing to be comforted and supported by God's love. And one of the biggest changes for me was believing that God's actually given me self-discipline to fight this battle. Growing up, I knew a lot of different things that could help me with my mental health, but I didn't feel like they were things I could stick with for the long haul. When you get diagnosed in the fifth grade, there's a lot of life ahead of you to go through this struggle, and I didn't feel like I had everything I needed. to like actually stick with it. But the idea that God gives me self-discipline to implement the things I learn, to go for the long haul and be able to glorify him makes such a difference. It doesn't mean that these things go away, the thoughts or fears or struggles, but it means that every time they come up, I can use the strength and power that God's given me to overcome them. A couple verses later in 2 Timothy 1:9, it says, "For God saved us and called us to live a holy life. He did this not because we deserve it, but because that was his plan from the beginning of time, to show us his grace through Jesus Christ." And God calls us to live a holy life, a life set apart from the world, and I really believe a life set apart from the way that the world deals with mental health issues. He gives us weapons that aren't of this world to fight our battles. He gives us power and love and self-discipline. But more than anything, he gives us the fact that Jesus died on the cross for our sins. He gives us the ability to come to him with all of our struggles, in all of our hard days, to be able to get the comfort and strength that we need to take on all of these things. I'm so grateful for his continuing grace to love me through my struggle, and I'm grateful that we can bring all these things to the foot of the cross. Thanks for letting me share.